fights with passion and he inspires.
Are you ready for a war?
All right, welcome back to From A to Arbitration. And it seems like I've been gone a long time, doesn't it? It's been a while since I've done an episode, but it's good to be back. Got a lot of stuff to cover today. Got a special guest that is going to talk to y'all today, and I can't wait to have this individual on for you. First, we're going to cover some other things, then I'll end with that, all right? Next week, JB's going to be back. I guess he put himself on probation from Aid Arbitration. He's going to come back next week, and I guess that he's decided it's time to get back on here and educate. So he's going to be on next week, and he's going to do the hour office time and some other things. He's talked to me about it. It's going to be fantastic. National's not doing anything about this hour office time. You go to regional training, they're out of touch as far as their training is concerned. They're doing shit that don't mean shit about shit. To me, when you do regional training, you need to do things for new shop stewards, for formal A's, get those things ready as far as case files, how to do those meetings. But you also need to do things that are relevant to today and our office time, these variances, standards, stationary events, all these things should be taught at regional training. And I think we drop the ball greatly when we don't do that. I think that's a disservice to the city letter carrier when we don't do those things and get our people prepared and ready. But we'll do that on From A to Arbitration, okay? I'm going to do that. If you look back over the episodes we've done, we've covered these things a million times. And we're going to keep doing it because I want y'all to be educated how to defend yourself and your office against management because they're pieces of shit. But got a few things I want to touch on, a few things I want to read. I want to read this to you, and I want y'all to think about this during this episode, all right? And it's from Lord Acton. I don't know if y'all have ever heard of him, but he's got one of the greatest quotes ever. This is Lord Acton. And it's so relevant with what we're dealing with today. It says, I cannot accept your canon that we are to judge Pope and King unlike other men, with a favorable presumption that they do no wrong. If there is any presumption, it is the other way against holders of power. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that is exactly what's going on with the NELC today. I'm going to read that one more time. I cannot accept your canon that we are to judge Pope and King unlike other men, with a favorable presumption that they do no wrong. If there is any presumption, it is the other way against holders of power. Power tends to corrupt, and absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's one of the strongest phrases, quotes you'll ever hear. The Weir Report, I read, had two episodes on it. And I talked about the heroes and the zeros, the studs and the duds. I talked about those things. I said, who would be y'all's heroes and zeros, studs and duds? Now that both reports, both episodes are out detailing the report, what are y'all's thoughts? And there was a lot of action on social media on the Weir Report. You had a lot of people that were angry that the Weir Report was read. Some business agents got on there and said, that was none of our business to have that report. Some people took exception to me saying that since I paid for the report, it should be mine. And they referenced, you know, we pay for fighter jets, but we don't get to fly those. So they're saying that our union dues are same as tax dollars, even though see how far you go if you don't pay your taxes. But, you know, that's their mindset, that our union dues are no different than taxes. So, you know, we pay for fighter jets. We can't go fly a fighter jet. So why should we have this report? That's the ignorance of some people in this union. And I told you about the fish last week, the sucker fish. You know, you had those running to the defense of the NELC. I love the NELC. I told you, I represent them fully. Whenever I'm working for the NLC, I give them everything I've got, but I'm not a fucking idiot. So if they're not doing their job, then I'm going to call that ass out. I will not suck up to them like a lot of these people do. I'm just not going to do it. If you're a failure, I'm going to tell you you're a fucking failure. And our top two right now are fucking failures. And but you got a lot of those that are sympathizers that they will suck that ass. And I think you're going to see that when this vote comes out. When you look at this Weir report, when you talk about absolute power corrupts, you know, I think that that's the perfect definition of the Weir report and how that went. When you look at the things that were in that report, I would have to say, when you talk about zeros, every single person that knew about this was a zero. Every single person that knew about the history and the issues with this president is a zero. It may not have changed the outcome of the vote because there was no option other than this ticket. There was no viable option. You had another person running, but that was a complete failure from the outset. That was never going to pass. I listened to, you know, I gave everybody full time. I listened. They had YouTube videos out with this ticket, and I couldn't get through a minute of it. There was no way I was going to vote for that ticket. So there was no option. But I wonder what the outcome would have been if they didn't try to dictate the outcome of the election by not telling us the truth, not being forthcoming with us. It's almost like election interference to me. When you didn't tell the members, here's the issues, that this is who we're going to put up for president. Here's the issues we're having with him right now. We're going to be honest with y'all and above board with y'all and let y'all decide. You know, here's what we've had going on for the last several years with this individual. And but we think that, you know, he's turned it around and he's going to be better or whatever. I think that I told you there's going to be some retribution about the charges. They will come out and they'll be highly pissed at the charges, that the findings came out, the Weir report came out, and y'all were told about it. So a lot of people didn't think that y'all should be told about the Weir report, given the contents of that. I'll say this, and this is not a threat. This is not a threat. I think that every individual that knew about it and did not inform the members is in dereliction of their duty and should be brought up on Article 10 charges. That's my feeling. Every individual that knew about the history of this president and what he did and what he continued to do should be brought up on Article 10 charges. That's a dereliction of y'all's duties. Plain and simple. Y'all can come after me all you want to. Y'all can come after anybody else that you want to, that distributed the report. Be careful. Be careful, because I believe you should be held in contempt of that. You should be held in violation of that. You should have charges brought against you for that. I'll be interested to see what happens in Boston. If somebody don't try to fire y'all's ass up with Article 10 charges for dereliction of y'all's duties, for allowing this to happen, as many people in there that were heroes, y'all are still culpable. Y'all are still responsible for this individual being in office and him not being held accountable. This vote will be a secret ballot vote because you have cowards amongst us. And they want to be held in secret, in private, in the dark. If you brought Article 10 charges against them, they would have to tell you where they stood. I think it should be done in public. I think everybody should know how you voted. Here's the damage that was done. I'll talk about my friend Susie Miller, the one that he said was Corey's bitch. Here's a girl that came to me because our business agent's office had let her down. She had a definite grievance for her son. And it was FMLA interference, one of the most blatant forms of it I've ever seen. And the business agent's office let her down, just like so many across this country are doing today. Let her down. And I told her she had a grievance. I don't know if y'all remember I had the episodes where I just shouted out, file the fucking grievance. Just file the fucking grievance. If y'all remember that episode, that was what I was talking about. And so she came to me and I helped her as much as I could, just like a lot of people do. And she went into that EEO and they won it. And that was when labor said, you know, well, the union didn't file a grievance, so we didn't know we were wrong. So then she, you know, she gets confronted at training aggressively by this president. Aggressively. And takes the guy's hand, takes her hand off a guy's shoulder, saying he's not important. This is your president now. Goes over, tries to strong arm this young lady, and ends up calling her a bitch when she don't cave into his absolute power. Right? When she don't cave into his absolute power, she's a bitch for that. He tries to strong arm her, and she doesn't cave in. She's a bitch for that. And yet this executive council didn't feel that that was warranted to be a severe charge. How many times in the Weir report did y'all hear individuals say, this happened, it was brought to our attention, and we're going to take care of it? You heard numerous people saying, we'll take care of it, only to find out it was never taken care of. Why? Because the actions continued long after. They didn't take care of anything. How about this? Maybe the worst thing. You have females telling Mr. Weir that if they were confronted with some kind of inappropriate conduct, sexual misconduct, they would not report it because of how Renfro handled that with Mr. Henry. What do y'all think about that? The damage that that has done to the females at NALC. And you will have people vote that he should stay in charge. The damage that that has done when females say, I will no longer report any inappropriate conduct towards me or any sexual advancements towards me because of how Mr. Renfro handled that situation with Mr. Henry. Think about that. And you will have those fish that are sucked on his ass. He's dragging these motherfuckers around up there. They're on his ass just dragging. That will vote that he should stay in charge. The damage that that has done. This entire thing has been a dark cloud on us since it came out. You have the Postal Service, and I had that episode and I was talking about chum in the water, sharks in the water. You heard Rolando had to go to Tolino. And Tolino says, I've not heard from your president. To this day, I've not heard from your president. They know that we are weak right now at our leadership. They know for a fact. And the things that are going on across this country are evidence of that. It's exhibit one of that, that they know that we are weak because of our leadership or lack thereof. You got Barner. This marshmallow is a straight up coward to labor. The things that this guy from labor is doing to Barner right now are unprecedented. The things that people send me, I'll read one of them. He says, yep, on the way out of the room on a break, I walked past Lloyd and asked him why he thinks the union is weaponizing it, talking about the cease and desist. Now, this Lloyd is the one who's straight bitch slapping Barner right now. He's made Barner his straight up bitch. And so he says, yep, on the way out of the room on a break, I walked past Lloyd and asked him why he thinks the union is weaponizing it, talking about the cease and desist. He said that if the union gets a cease and desist for a violation and management violates it again, what does the union do? I said, file a non-compliance grievance. He said, right. And what is the remedy that they asked for? I said, a compensatory remedy. He said, exactly. That's weaponizing it. I said, no. Management had the option to comply or not, and they chose not to. That's their fault, not ours. He said, well, I disagree, and then walked away. This is what he's saying in front of Barner, the marshmallow man. Maybe we should start calling him Stay Puff instead of Pony Boy. What do y'all think about Stay Puff? I think that's what I'll do. I'm going to start calling him Stay Puff instead of Pony Boy. Stay Puff Marshmallow, because that's what he is. He's soft as a marshmallow right now. And here's another one. You talk about power corrupts, right? When you hear that saying, when it says power tends to corrupt and absolute power corrupts absolutely, you look at the position that our DRT is in right now. They've been neutered by Barner, who's straight up cowardly. They've been neutered, and this is on purpose. Do y'all know whose responsibility the DRT was? Whose purview that fell under? James Henry. And here's your leader, Mr. Renfro. When Mr. Henry is begging to meet with him to clear his name. Y'all heard the emails. I read them to you. To clear his name. Do you know what Renfro does? Cuts his job responsibilities. Cuts them. That's a vindictive little motherfucker right there. That's corruption. When it talks about absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's the definition of it. Here's a gentleman that says, hey, we need to talk. We need to talk. You've defamed me. We need to talk so that I can clear my name. I'm not going to talk with you. Matter of fact, I'm going to cut your job responsibilities. You know who he gave that to? Barner. The DRT was Mr. Henry's. That was his responsibility. Renfro cuts his responsibilities and hands it to Barner. You see why? James Henry would never go for what's going on at the DRT right now. He would never go for that. You know why? He's a man. He's not a bitch like Barner. or Stay Puff. I'll call him Stay Puff. He's not a coward like Stay Puff is right now. There's a reason he was given the DRT. Is so that they could neuter that. Do you know what happened to Mr. Jackson, the one who brought the charges against Renfro? Do you know what happened to him? His responsibilities were cut as well by Renfro. His responsibilities were cut as well. Power tends to corrupt. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. That's exactly what we're dealing with. You've got an executive council that has given in to absolute power. They will not hold him accountable for what he's done. They will not hold him accountable for the things that he's done and what he's done to individuals. He has absolute power over those individuals, that executive council. He has absolute power over them, and you're fixing to see it in this vote. So I say, again, before I get off of this onto something else, I say, you bring Article 10 charges against every one of them motherfuckers that knew about it and didn't tell us. Do that. Chew on that. Come after whoever you want to about this weird report. Come after whoever you want to. I say y'all's asses need to have Article 10 charges filed on you for dereliction of your fucking duties, for putting somebody in place that you knew wasn't fit. You knew wasn't fit. You held things from the delegation. You held things from the members that were critical in this vote. And you did it on purpose. Why? So that y'all could have absolute power. You're so afraid of losing your positions. You jeopardized the NALC by doing what you did. And you should be held accountable for that. And maybe some Article 10 charges would help y'all out with that. What do y'all think? Huh? Y'all think I'm fucking around? Come fuck with me. You have no idea. No idea, motherfucker, how far we can go. I'll tell you that. You have jeopardized the city letter carrier. The only ones I care about. The only ones I care about. You've jeopardized them. So come and get you some. That's all I can say. You sorry motherfuckers, you. I'm going to read a couple of things to you. And then I've got an arbitration site. I'm going to talk about it a little bit. Next Sunday is the Zoom meeting for Build a Fighting NLC. You know, we've had that. There's been a couple so far. A lot of great response to that. A lot of great response. That's a great movement right now. When I talk about y'all are going to sway this election, this movement right here will be a piece of that puzzle. Okay? But because the time that comes around, this will be a tsunami on this vote. It was what, 15% last time? It was sad at best. I guarantee you it'll be 60% or over the vote this time around. There'll be so much momentum. So many people wanting change. And this bill to fighting NELC would be a huge piece of that puzzle. And here's what it says. This is for the Zoom meeting next Sunday, okay? And you'll have, I put links up on Reddit and Discord. So if you go on from aidarbitration.com, I think Jeremy has a link up on that as well. You can go find the link on there. And so you can register on there and that you'll be on it, okay? So I put it on Discord. I put it on Reddit. I think Jeremy's going to put it up on from aidarbitration.com. And so get on there and just check it out. Check it out. Numbers matter. Y'all are part of something that will revolutionize the NLC as we see it today. Y'all are part of something that's going to revolutionize the NLC. And y'all are going to completely flip this thing. I promise you. So a Zoom meeting. Build a fighting NLC. What does a fighting union look like? Main speaker, Corey Walton from NLC Branch 4 and the From Aid Arbitration podcast on what does a fighting union look like and how we can build it. NLC members across the country are fed up with the lack of transparency and action around the contract. We need a new approach to contract negotiations. 20 NLC branches and one NLC state association have passed the opening bargaining resolution so far. Join NLC members from across the country to discuss how to win open bargaining and build a fighting NLC. Win Sunday, April 14th at noon, CT, 10 a.m. PT, 1 p.m. ET. All right, so there's that. Y'all get on there. It's pretty cool stuff, man, seeing the numbers that get on there that are interested on a Sunday, your day off. Most of us, unfortunately, for CCAs, babies, y'all working. But Sunday, the interest that's building about this. People are tired. They're fed up with the cowardly NLC that we've got. It's been going on for several years. Our top two are the biggest cowards I've ever seen and have completely shit the nest and are getting run over. Otis and Stay Puff. So, I know the little fella. He don't like that. Little Barner, but hell, I'm just fucking with you, man. I'm just fucking with you. I do think you're a coward, though. I'll tell you that. But so Otis and Stay Puff are failures as far as I'm concerned. Here's another thing. Fighting back against sorting and delivery centers resolution. Whereas the United States Postal Service has begun to implement Postmaster General Louis DeJoy's 10-year Delivering for America plan, including removing carrier operations from hundreds of local post offices as consolidate into regional hubs called sorting and delivery centers, S&DCs. Whereas S&DCs will further deteriorate our ability to provide quality service by potentially preventing customers from having local and easily accessible post offices in their town or neighborhood, which will force customers to travel as much as 30 minutes to access a postal facility. Whereas S&DCs will increase the travel distance from stations to routes, and which added on average 11 miles each way for carrier units that were consolidated in September, according to the OIG study, a framework for delivery network optimization, which will increase carbon emissions and offset potential benefits from updating and electrifying the vehicle fleet. Whereas S&DCs will negatively impact the city carrier craft by increasing the commuting distance for the carriers to travel to work, thereby transferring transportation costs and additional unpaid time and commute onto postal employees themselves. Therefore, be it resolved that NELC Branch 3 calls on the National NELC to 1. Publicly oppose the further implementation of sorting and delivery centers across the country. 2. Build a national campaign with APW, NRLCA, MPMHU, customers, community groups, and elected officials to organize informational pickets, mobilize members and customers to public hearings about proposed SNDCs to build opposition to the plan, and publicly demand that any proposed changes to USPS operations not come at the expense of our working conditions or our ability to provide prompt, reliable service or customers' access to postal facilities. David Groskopf, Jr., President, NELC Branch 3, Buffalo, West New York, and Kim Fitzgerald, Secretary, Treasurer, NELC Branch 3. So that's something that's gaining a lot of momentum. Another thing that's gaining a lot of momentum is David Groskopf. That dude's a fire breather, if you know him. We are lucky to have that guy. I pay attention to his name. I would remember that name, David Groskopf, Jr., the president of NELC Branch 3. Pay attention to that guy. He's an up-and-comer. That dude is a fire breather, and he's one that we need, to me, one that we need in bigger positions. You never know what will happen, but I would remember that name, okay? I'm going to read from a decision I just got back, and I thought it was a great read because it everything that we talk about on From A to Arbitration, looking at the file, taking the 14 days to research, to investigate, this decision was spot on. And I don't know if y'all remember, I told you I had two removals a few weeks ago. One was a CCA with horrendous attendance, and it had progressive discipline. And the other was a gentleman that they accused of taking the Voyager card and buying gasoline for his personal vehicle. I have not got that one back. But I did get the one on the CCA with the horrendous attendance. This shop steward won this case. And the arbitrator says it. The shop steward taking the time to fight. Whenever somebody says to me, man, this case right here is too big. Where do I start? You always start the sub-questions of just cause. That's where I always start, because if you can win one of those, the discipline should fall. It's supposed to fall. They even acknowledge that in their own handbook, the EL handbook. That's where I would start. That's your blueprint. The six sub-questions of just cause. If we can find a violation of just one, we have a great chance of winning. This shop steward, Jason Crosby, he's out of Nashville, was an outside steward, and he was also the formal A. He did a fantastic job for me in arbitration. Very good witness. But what happens is he gets all these clock rings. I can't remember how many it was, several hundred. And he goes through each one. And management had removed the CCA, and a majority of his instances were tardies. Okay? They were tardies. Well, Crosby goes through these clock rings, and he finds like 388 tardies besides the CCAs. And it was too much for management to overcome. That's doing your work. When I say you got 14 days to investigate that grievance, do every humanly thing possible to find something, this guy did it. And the arbitrator recognizes it. A lot of times we used to have a guy here in Nashville, you'd get discipline one day, the 8190 the next. We've wasted 14 days. You've wasted it. We will never get it back. You put so much pressure on your formal step A when you do that. So much pressure on your formal step A. Now they've got to put in a request for information, or you may have turned it in the same day you did the 8190 And then they've got to wait for that. They've got 7 days. They've got to wait for that. Now you cut them down to about 3 or 4 days. They have to investigate. Make sure you're taking the 14 days that you've got allotted to investigate that grievance fully. All right. I'm going to read you this decision. It's very brief, but it's going to show you the importance of doing your work, because I want you to listen to how he talks to the CCA. This guy was fired if it wasn't for this shop steward, Jason Crosby. Here's what he says. While other arguments raised by the union certainly have merit, it is my determination that the grievance should be sustained based upon the compelling evidence produced, which shows that the postal attendants' rules cited by the service are not consistently and equitably enforced at the Madison Post Office. The union's formulate contentions, which are supported by documentary evidence in the form of clock rings, reads as follows. For pay period 15-1, besides the grievant, 8 carriers were late 29 times. For pay period 15-2, besides the grievant, 11 carriers were late 29 times. For pay period 16-1, besides the grievant, 10 carriers were late 23 times. For pay period 16-2, besides the grievant, 12 carriers were late 35 times. For pay period 17-1, besides the grievant, 10 carriers were late 31 times. For pay period 17-2, besides the grievant, 9 carriers were late 31 times. For pay period 18-1, besides the grievant, 11 carriers were late 35 times. For pay period 18-2, besides the grievant, 11 carriers were late 34 times. For pay period 19-1, besides the grievant, 8 carriers were late 25 times. For pay period 19-2, besides the grievant, 10 carriers were late 22 times. For pay period 21, besides the grievant, 10 carriers were late 24 times. For pay period 22, besides the grievant, 10 carriers were late 20 times. And I had the formal A read that as is. He read that entire thing just like that. That's overwhelming. That's overwhelming. Here's what the arbitrator said. The record also reveals that no carrier, apart from this carrier, received discipline for tardies in attendance in 2023. This is, quite frankly, an astonishing number of tardies from a post office the size of Madison. In the face of this striking evidence, management can only muster a contention that most of the carriers call and let us know what's going on, and some we have given approval due to daycare. As the union points out, it is management's burden to show that the rule they seek to enforce is consistently and equitably enforced. The union argues that it is not, and has provided compelling evidence suggesting as much. The service's allegations of call-ins and approved leave for employees with children in daycare are not supported by documentary evidence or supporting testimonial evidence from other employees. As arbitrator Renfro said, the parties herein are well aware of the general rule that disparate treatment, unequal discipline for similar misconduct, is not looked upon with favor by any arbitrator. Unequal discipline imposed, even by a well-meaning but somewhat disorganized employer, will consistently be overturned as discriminatory when appealed to arbitration. Arbitrator Renfro, 1980 at 10. Finding that Postal Service rules and regulations regarding attendance, particular tardies, are not consistent and equitably enforced at the Madison Post Office, it is my decision that the grievance must be sustained. However, this should in no way be interpreted as condoning this carrier's attendance. His attendance record is, by any standard, horrendous. There are plenty of legitimate reasons an employee might have a poor attendance record. I have both sustained and denied numerous grievances in cases where the employee's poor attendance record was not truly their fault. But there is no excuse for being chronically late. As my father used to tell me, when you arrive late, you're telling the person expecting you that your time is more valuable than theirs. During the time frame outlined in the notice of removal, this carrier was an average of roughly 30 minutes late every day. This clearly isn't an issue of occasionally hitting traffic or some other unexpected event slowing your arrival up to work. If you're 30 minutes late every day for a month, that's a sign that you care so little for your job that you can't be bothered to glance at a clock. Further, the grievance justification for his habitual tardiness at the investigative interview, just be running late, walks the line between indifference and impudence. Now, do y'all remember when I had my episode on the investigative interview, one of my first episodes, maybe one of the first five? And I said, what drives me crazy is when you go into an investigative interview and they say, sick, 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 sick. That investigative interview is not for management. They've already determined you're going to get disciplined. That's a formality. Investigative interviews are a formality. It's reached the point of your discipline. They've got to do that to get you to the discipline. It's something that they're required to do. You're going to get discipline. Talk to the arbitrator. That's what you're doing in an investigative interview. You're helping the shop steward in the investigative interview. Give us something. When you go in and say, sick, 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 hear the answer when this guy says, why are you late all these times? It was an accusatory question, but why are you constantly late? And his answer was, this is what his answer was. Just be running late. That was his answer. Just be running late. Hey, you've got to help us out in investigative interviews. I would go over each one of those and say, in this one, I came out and this happened. In this one, you give us something more than just be running late. Anyway, and the arbitrator took exception to it, which, you know, when Crosby and I were talking about it, that's what he was saying. How am I going to get past that? I said, hell, you're not. The answer is the answer. And I put dude on the stand. Normally I wouldn't have, but I put him on the stand because I wanted him to talk about it. Just be running late. What the hell is that? But anyway, this is what he says. Walks the line between indifference and impudence. Were it not for the work of his steward, Mr. Crosby, in pouring over hundreds of pages of employee clock rings to expose the laissez-faire approach to tardiness taken by management of this office, this removal would be upheld. I'm going to read that again. Shop stewards, do your work. This is the perfect example of using the 14 days to find something. I always say that. Give me something. Something I can hang my hat on. Give me something, anything, and I'm going to run with it. Give me something. I'm going to read this again. Were it not for the work of his steward, Mr. Crosby, in pouring over hundreds of pages of employee clock rings to expose the laissez-faire approach to tardiness taken by management at this office, this removal would be upheld. That's how close this gentleman was to being out of a job. That's how close. And some people say, well, hell, his attendance so bad, he don't even want the job. Fuck that. I hate management. I hate those motherfuckers. I want to win all the time. I hate them. Can't stand labor. And I know they listen. I hate y'all. I think y'all are the worst of the worst. And so, fuck that. Somebody's saying, he's late all the time. He don't care about his job. I don't give a shit. I hate management that much. I want to win all the time. I never want to lose. So, as it is, this carrier has yet another opportunity to learn the importance of arriving to work on time. My suggestion would be that he takes advantage of this. A career with the Postal Service is a valuable thing to have, and it would be a shame to lose it for no better reason than you can't get to work when you're expected to be there. For the reasons set forth above, the grievance is sustained. The notice of removal shall be rescinded and expunged from the grievance record. While my inclination would be to reduce the removal to a long-term suspension without back pay, it would be inequitable to do so when the record shows that other employees with excessive tardies received no discipline. As such, the grievance shall be returned to work and made whole for all lost wages and benefits as soon as administratively possible. So, fantastic job to Jason Crosby, who's a great guy, a fantastic guy, a great shop steward in Formal A, did a great job there. But because of his work, we were successful. And a fantastic job. All right, special guest. This special guest I'm going to have on was somebody that we were brought together by a mutual acquaintance, okay? We're brought together by a mutual acquaintance, and we got a hold of each other. I'm going to play this. We just had a Zoom and I recorded it. I'm going to play this. Now, I sound terrible on here. My shit is messed up. His came out pretty good. Mine's terrible. But I'm going to play this and I'm going to come back on the other side of it, okay? So here's my special guest that we've been waiting on. A lot of people have reached out about it. Here he is, and I'm going to come back on the other side of it and talk to you, okay? All right, special guest.
All right, I told everybody we was going to have a very special guest. I got him on today. It's arbitrator Troy Swallow, and y'all heard me talk about what's going on with him. It's pissed me the fuck off, and a lot of people on social media are upset about it as well. Now, we have gotten together by mutual acquaintance, okay? It was not labor, although labor was the one who initially told me about what happened to arbitrator Swallow. I had no idea, and they told me about it. Mutual acquaintance got us together, and he wanted to come on here and clear his name. I'm not going to speak for him, but I've got him on here. So, arbitrator Swallow, I'm going to let you say your piece. And then I may ask you just a few questions as this goes along, but it's all yours, okay?
Thank you, Corey. And as I have said in multiple arbitrations, you can dispense with the arbitrator title and just call me Troy. The older you get, the more you'll appreciate that. But and I appreciate the introduction as a special guest. My mother used to always say, take the square root of any compliment, you might get close to the truth. So, but yes, I did. I was very interested in coming on your podcast to inform as many people as possible of a couple of things. First, I did not contact the post office nor the union about any sort of personal problems or any sort of issue that I had. I've got a request from Vice President Barner, and I believe her name is Jennifer Breslin from the post office, to have a Zoom meeting. So, and I'll talk about the timing of the request in a moment. But anyway, I got the request and I gave them some dates. And matter of fact, the very day that I sent in the availability, my availability, they set it up for that day, if I'm not mistaken, and did it pretty quick. And there was, and I'll say this too, there was no discussions back and forth from my recollection at all, other than maybe just a slight inconsequential question or answer. But there were no discussions back and forth between Ms. Breslin and Mr. Barner. It was pretty much set in stone, whatever they wanted to talk to me about. And the result of that was that my services were no longer needed. Any cases that were outstanding, that they wanted me to write the award, any case that I retained jurisdiction on, that they would assign someone else, and any other case was already scheduled, that they would assign another arbitrator. So I inquired at some point, I said, hey, I think I'm entitled to know something different. And there was not anything that I can recall, not one mention of anything personal. And the only thing that was mentioned was about my awards. I think I recall that Mr. Barner said, we don't need to be told who to hire, I guess referring to the committee that I had attempted to set up in Memphis, that an expedited award of 42 pages in Dallas was unnecessary. It didn't need to be that long. Of course, if you read the award, you'll see why it shouldn't have. In my opinion, it shouldn't have been an expedited case. It should have been a regular panel case, and I explained why. And I went through that process. But there was nothing personal. And I received a recording from President Renfro that says, essentially, hey, if y'all knew, y'all would agree 100%, or y'all would agree with me, it's personal. Well, nobody bothered to pick up the phone and call me and say anything personal. Nobody asked me my opinion. There was nothing said. And so the way I viewed what President Renfro said could be defamatory to me. I didn't quit. And if anybody wants to know if Troy Swallow's a quitter, come to Lumberton, Texas, and ask anybody that knows me, or go to Hardin County, the larger Hardin County, anybody that knows me, and they'll tell you that I'm not a quitter. And I didn't quit. I enjoyed my time on the panel. And we can talk about that later. But I just want to let everyone know that I know of nothing personal. Now, I will say this, that I did mention in that Zoom meeting that I lost my father September the 9th. And anybody that, and I had previously lost my mother several years ago, and anybody that has been in that situation knows that it takes the wind out of you a little bit. Not all the briefs were due on the awards at that time. And then I got sick somewhere around Thanksgiving and just couldn't get rid of this cough until Christmas. And I think I'd even made a reference, and I don't know, they wouldn't let me get the RSV vaccine until I was 60. I didn't know what I had, but I might have had COVID or something, but I was in pretty bad shape. And you know how that'll get you down too. But that was not the thrust of the meeting. That they called, there was no discussion back and forth. Why are you late? There was no discussion between Barner and Miss Breslin saying, hey, what do you think? What do you think? Their mind was made up when they called me. And so, which leads me to this, that when you have a president of the union saying one thing, right, and your executive vice president saying something totally different, how do you operate a system that way, right? I mean, this is a big organization, and they need to at least get together and figure out what the deal is. But I'll tell you something else that I'm kind of shocked about. I have not issued those awards because I'm waiting to get something in the mail. And look, as everyone knows, there's no way that I can write and I can do the work that I do based upon reading my awards. There's no way that I can do that in 2 days. I hope everybody sees that. I couldn't write 150 so pages in Memphis in 2 days and read however many thousands of pages and get through that case. You just can't do it. So it's not a matter of me giving free time to the effort. I'm more than happy to do that. But what I don't want to do is I don't want to end up in a situation and turn in the awards and then all of a sudden my invoice gets cut, you know, and I don't get paid anything. That's happened before. And I can give you some examples of that. But it's kind of curious to me. And I told you I was going to tell you this. Online, you can see when things were filed. And apparently, when Memphis was appealed to the district court, they either were ordered or they requested to participate in their alternative dispute resolution process, and they went to mediation. And the phone call I got, I mean, the Zoom meeting I got, happened within days of them telling the district court that they that they had settled the case. So I haven't seen the mediated settlement agreement. I doubt I ever will. I doubt that there's anything in there, but it's just kind of curious that it was all kind of at the same within days of each other. There was no mention of anything personal. I don't know. I would welcome a phone call from President Renfro or Ms. Breslin to say, hey, this is what we know. And this is why. And I'd like an explanation why Barner took the lead and told me all those things and never mentioned that. You know, I know that he was insistent that that I not share what the Zoom meeting with any advocate on more than one occasion. And I said, I haven't heard anything embarrassing or anything. And I gave the post office and the union, you know, complete authority to disclose whatever they were saying on that Zoom meeting. And I'll say it again. It's got to be, look, that is the only record today of what happened to me. So I'm assuming that that is public record. I'm assuming that they recorded the Zoom meeting, and I'm assuming that anybody can get a copy of that if they go through the proper channels, and they can see it, and they have my absolute authority to release that. There was nothing on there that the way President Renfro put it out there, and I'm offended because I gave both sides my all. I hope that come through with my awards.
All right. For some reason, I got 4.5 minutes. I thought I had 40, but I got 4.5 minutes. Earlier, you said you got a recording from Renfro. Did you mean you got a recording of Renfro talking about you?
Yes, yes.
Okay. All right. I want to make sure that the most important thing, other than I think it's Bush League, how this was all handled with you, and I'll say that. I've said it before. You said Barner took the lead with labor on the Zoom. Did he treat you with respect in your eyes when he was talking to you in front of labor?
You know, that was one of the reasons why I said, well, I'd like to know. I you know, everybody's got their own personality, and I'm sure terminating someone would give anyone indigestion, but I just felt like that there was more to it, that he was, I just know that I would not have communicated in the same manner. I mean, I just thought it was kind of rough and especially after, and I hope it comes across, maybe it doesn't, after the efforts I gave to both sides to write awards that were fair, you know, and impartial, and, you know.
Yeah. Well, I want to say this. I will have you back on. I'm going to upgrade to pro is what it says. I'm going to do that so I have more time on the next one. I'm going to have you back on. But before I let you go, I apologize on behalf of the city letter carriers for how you were treated by our own, and that was Barner. I wanted to tell you that. It pisses me off like you couldn't believe that they would do somebody like that. So I apologize to you on behalf of the city letter carriers that you're treated like that. One more thing. On behalf of the city letter carriers in Memphis, you're the only one that would have done what you did as far as the award that you gave. And I can't thank you enough for saying, hey, look, we're going to put everything aside and protect the city letter carriers first and foremost. So again, I've not been able to talk to you about that, but I wanted to say thank you as far as that's concerned. You got a minute and a half. Talk to me.
Well, first, I appreciate very much your work, your comments. You don't have to apologize. Individual people take on, they do their own thing. And I know, look, I have nothing but fond memories of employees that work in the Postal Service, both the city letter carriers and those that are of management. I was treated with courtesy and kindness. The advocates have tough jobs. My life has been enriched by that. And if people want to do certain things just because they're in a position, you don't have to apologize for that. And I don't have any ill feelings. I would love to come back and serve both sides. And in the meantime, I'm gonna sit back and figure out what I'm gonna do to fill the void. I may.
Well, I'm gonna have you back on. We're gonna talk about a book. How's that sound? All right.
It's if anybody enjoyed my quips, you'll enjoy the novel. So
All right, brother. I'm
we'll
gonna have
talk
you
about
back on. I don't want you to cut off on you right here. I'll get you back on, okay, Arbitrator Swallow.
sounds good.
All
And
right.
listen, if I got just enough time, I want to thank all the advocates and everyone that I have met. It was a great experience. Keep up what you're doing, and really, I really mean.
All right. So there you had it. Cut off right there at the end. For some reason, thought I had like 40 minutes, but I didn't. I mean, he's talking and my little thing pops up saying you got 5 minutes left, 10 minutes left, whatever. So it cut off right at the end. I have him on again, but that's Arbitrator Troy Swallow. And he was the one that did the Memphis case. And he was highly upset that there was some kind of inference that he was. That something was wrong with him, that he's done something that he shouldn't have, is what, if you heard this recording by Renfro, kind of made it sound like this guy had done something, and he did not like that at all. And I thought it was quite cowardly of our leadership to do that. I still say that a bitch move by Barner, straight Bush League, to get on a Zoom call with labor and degrade this man. That is cowardly 101. I don't care whether you like me or not. I know that somebody, when we got the Memphis decision, I had the episode about the Memphis decision a long, long time ago when it first came out. And I was giving all the credit to Jay. And somebody had told me that Barner had said, well, it really wasn't that good of a decision. The only reason that was said is because my name was on it. That's the only reason that was said, is because if it was somebody else's name on it, they'd have said what it was. It's one of the biggest decisions we've gotten because you went after and got a district manager. Nobody's ever had that happen. Now that wasn't me. I mean, that was the case file that did that. But and the arbitrator Swallow, had the cojones to do that. And to get on a Zoom meeting with labor, who you've turned straight bitch to labor. I don't know what in the fuck's happened to you, man, with this Lloyd going around and kissing his ass in front of the union people. You're a straight embarrassment. I wish you could see the messages I get from the people that are embarrassed to have you up there representing the NLC in front of this Lloyd walking around sucking his ass in front of everybody. You're an embarrassment, man. You're a fucking embarrassment to the NLC. And then to call this man, who's done so much, who's had the guts to rule like he has, and to call him in front of labor and dismiss this man like that, straight bitch. It chapped my ass when I heard it. Hell, I had to hear it from labor. They called me and asked me if I'd heard about it. But I feel for the guy, man. You could tell he was hurting, and I appreciate him coming on. And he wanted to tell y'all, that it was not him. He's not a quitter, and it was not his idea. And that, because here's the thing that people don't understand about arbitration. When you talk about ex parte communication, if we had the Memphis case and before he renders a decision, I call him and I say, hey, I don't know how you felt like the hearing went, but there's some things you need to know. That's ex parte communication. If you call him, say, bitch ass Barner or somebody else calls him and says, hey, look, your decisions are way too long. We're getting grief about them. Cut those decisions down about a third. And also, if you're scheduled an expedited case, rule on it as an expedited case. Don't send it back to us. That's not ex parte communication. That's trying to correct something. You don't do that. You don't do that. And I'll tell you this. If y'all are trying to imply that something has come out about this man, now I don't know that, but this is what I'm thinking. If you're trying to imply that something's come out about this man, you're the pot calling the kettle black, bitch, because we have just gotten the Weir report where I've got a president who is convicted of DUI, could have been catastrophic to the city letter carriers. Y'all hid that. And this motherfucker was still elected. Do not come out and say, we found out something about this man after y'all have done that shit. I'm not going to hear that. You better not come out and say, well, there's some things that come up. Bitch, this Weir report came out, and y'all are protecting that son of a bitch up there at the top. So don't come at me with that either. When you got a guy sitting up there with this Weir report as damning as anything I've ever seen, and y'all covered that shit up. So you should have come to that man's defense and said, hey, this man's going to serve out his time. Now, if y'all want to kick him off the panel on this new contract, that's fine. But I ain't calling nobody for nothing. He's going to serve out his term. That's what should have happened. But you're a cowardly motherfucker. That's why it didn't. And you hurt this man. That's an embarrassment. As a union person, that's a fucking embarrassment. We don't do that as a union. We protect people like that, man. Piece of shit. Call this man in front of labor. How fucking embarrassing is that? You cowardly piece of shit. Man, we need a change, folks. This shit here is exactly why we need a fucking change. I get messages all the time. There's one that was put on Facebook where this individual's having a hell of a time in their station. A hell of a time in their station. The shop stewards don't do shit. The president don't do shit. Reach out to NBA. They don't do shit. We need a change and some feet and asses. When I'm business agent, I'm going to make sure every carrier in my region gets the representation like I get. Because Jason Leith, JB, is my formal A. That's the type of representation I want every individual in my region to get, and I will not stop until it happens. Now, there's a lot of great union representatives, a lot of great stewards and formal A's and everything, but I'm just saying, as an example, I will not stop until every carrier has the same representation that I've got. I've got JB, who I consider to be one of the best I've seen. I will not stop until every single carrier in this region has that same type of representation. And look at what we've got at the top with Otis and Stay Puft. Two of the biggest cowards I've ever fucking seen in my life. And you've got enablers that are holding these motherfuckers up. It's unfucking believable. They can't get run out of town fast enough. Power tends to corrupt. And absolute power corrupts absolutely. And that's exactly what's happened with the NELC. All right, that's going to be it. I know I said I was going to do the publication 552. Fuck, that's going to be an hour and a half. And so I'm going to leave it right there. JB's going to come next week during the hour office time. I will come back the next week and do publication 552. All these things are going to tie in together. All these reports that I told you about when we're talking about were committed, that there will be no tolerance of. Remember when I had that episode? All those things I was talking about were committed, there will be no tolerance of. All these things are going to start tying in together, okay? And I'm going to show you what I'm talking about. So sorry I didn't get to that. Now, there's a lot of other stuff I need to get into, but, man, it's taking quite a bit here. So anyway, look, I love each and every one of you. I do. I know there are a lot of people who don't like me, and a lot of people are coming out against me right now. Great. I love that shit. I fucking love it. You know, I love chapping motherfuckers' asses, son. I do. Like I said, and I'm not one to toot my own horn, my record speaks for itself. The shit I've done speaks for itself, whether it's informal, formal, arbitration, or on here. So I don't give two fucks what anybody thinks about me. They can roll all that up and shove it up the ass. And these motherfuckers at National that don't like me can kiss all this ass all the time. Just constantly kiss this ass like y'all do Renfro's. Do it like that. I have the cleanest ass in the country. You motherfuckers, you. But I love each and every one of you, man, and we will not stop. We will not stop until we get this ship righted. Okay? We need to get sailing in the right direction. We're not right now. Change is coming. I'm telling y'all that. I'm telling you that. From me to you, I've never lied to you. Change is coming. I promise you. Promise you that. I love you very much. And I will go to the ends of the earth to fight for y'all. Somebody put this up the other day, and I'll end with this, okay? Joining a union is essentially saying you're ready to throw down for any worker, even a stranger. And you know without having to ask, they've made that same promise to you. Metal as hell. Everyone should do it. And that's our motto. Joining a union is essentially saying you're ready to throw down for any worker, even a stranger. And you know without having to ask that they've made the same promise to you. That's how we should be. How many times have I said we're going to get ready to boogie? At the drop of a hat, we're coming, and we're coming with bad intention. That's the NELC that I remember. And we've gotten away from that. We don't do anything with bad intention anymore. You know, I mean, we've got them. Our leaders are walking around and fucking tutus on their fucking tiptoes. Dancing around in front of labor right now. That's what we've got. So we need to get some strong leadership back up there, man. We got some fucking clowns up there right now, but we're going to get it, man. We're going to get it. Y'all hang in there, all right? Next week, JB, with an hour at office time, we're going to start attacking the shit out of that, and then we're going to come back with publication 552. We're going to start firing some fucking managers up that ain't worth shit, all right? I love y'all. I'll talk to y'all next Sunday, all right? Bye.